Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. It's a good day here at Worldwide KFUO. Continuing our conversations today on topics in aging, we're going to talk about culture change to a culture of person-centered care when it comes to elder care. So we're going to talk about that here in just a little bit with our friends from Lutheran Senior Services. And also in the second segment, in the second half of the hour, we're going to talk with our friends from the seminaries of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, Concordia Seminary in St. Louis, and Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, about some programs that they offer for youth, for young men and young women during the summers to find out about vocations in the church. So we're going to talk about that in the second half of the program. Hope you can join us for all of it. I want to say thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for supporting this program. To find out more about Concordia University, Wisconsin, just go to our website, kfuo.org, and look for the CUW logo in the sponsor section there, and that'll take you to their page. Go check it out, kfuo.org. Joining me in studio today, Joan Devine. She's the Director of Performance Improvement for Lutheran Senior Services, LSS Living, and we've got some great stuff to talk about today. Joan, welcome to Worldwide KFUO and Faith and Family.
Well, thank you. It's great to be here.
Now, what does a director of performance improvement do? You make everybody perform better, right?
Well, we hope so. I work with all the clinical programs at Lutheran Senior Services. We have 10 continued care retirement communities and one independent assisted living. And I work with them on clinical programs, but very much involved in our person-centered care movement, the culture change within the organization. So that really is the fun part of my job.
Now, culture change sounds kind of like a loaded phrase. What does that mean? What does culture change mean?
It is. It's a tough one for people. Really, it's all about the goal is to change the culture of aging, to change the culture within community settings specifically is where a lot of the focus has been placed because we've grown up with a culture, we have evolved as a culture in a very medical model. Particularly, a lot of our work is done in our care centers and our long-term care because, quite frankly, that's where we have most of the work to do. We inherited a medical model of care, buildings that looked like a hospital. In many cases, that's what they were when they started out. We have brought our elders in to live in communities where the last days of your life, you're in a semi-private room with someone you've never met before, very regimented times for eating and for activities and for everything that you do. And that's not the culture that we believe that our elders deserve in their later age. And it, you know, culture changes. I have to tell you, it's interesting. I was working with a group years ago. And they happen to be a group of religious. And we were talking about, we were having our initial conversation on coming to your community and really talking about culture change. And they were a little uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And as we began to talk about
it's because it involves the word change.
Well, it does. But for them, even more so, this was a group of religious who had a very, very strong culture. And always had. And so we talked about it a little bit and said, you know what? It's really not culture change we're looking for. It's culture discovery. We, as those who are here to be with you and to be the caregivers or the care partners with you, we need to discover your culture, whether it's as an order of religious or whether it's as an individual person. I need to know what your culture is because how can I respect it and honor it if I don't know what it is?
Right.
So it's really a journey that is very individualized. I need to get to know every senior that I care for. I need to know who they are, what their values are, what brings joy to their life, if I'm going to truly create home for them in the settings that they're living in, whether it's a quote-unquote an old institutional setting, and we won't use that one anymore, whether it's a home that is a community home or whether it's their own home and receiving services from others.
You're right. We have for a long time, we've had more of this institutional approach to caring for elders. We even take that approach in a number of other organizations and aspects of life. We have this institutional approach that everything must fit in the structure of the institution. And that does kind of leave some people out to fall through the cracks and it leaves out some needs that aren't being met. So now how do you go about making this culture change? You said the first step is getting to know the culture, getting to know the people and the culture and learning about their needs. where do you go from there?
You know, it's not an easy process. Mm-hmm. There is no cookie cutter answer to it. But we've learned over the years some fundamental things. One is absolutely getting to know people and respecting them and honoring their wishes and their desires. And that required some fundamental changes. And I'm going to talk nursing homes here, uh-huh. in how we practiced. And things like having dedicated staff. Seems very, very simple and very basic. But for years, the mindset in long-term care was you had to rotate assignments, and assignments, there's a lovely word, you had to rotate because, heaven forbid, the caregiver might get burned out if someone's needs were more than someone else's. But what we've learned is, you know, like so many other things in life, it is all about relationships. Mm-hmm. And if I'm truly going to get to know you, if I can truly honor and respect your needs, then I need to be with you on a regular basis. So one of the fundamental practices in person-centered care is that I have to have dedicated staffing. And that means my CNA, who cares for the resident, who really knows more than any of the rest of us, and I'm a registered nurse by background. Certainly for the nurses, we need that dedicated staffing. But even the housekeeper, mm-hmm. The other people that are part of your life, we want them to be a part of your life. And that truly makes life a lot more fun for everybody.
And so this probably comes back to that question of quantity versus quality time. Because there's a lot of about this that really has to do with time, mm-hmm. time spent together. And so the quality of time and the quantity of time and how that's used.
And how we value how time is used. In a mm-hmm. very traditional model of long-term care, it was all about, we were focused on tasks. And quite honestly, as a nurse, that's what I was taught.
Sure.
And so now we're saying to people, you know, to sit down and have a conversation with someone, that's a value. And we honor and respect that. And you're not going to be told you're wasting time and you're not getting six other things done. Mm-hmm. You're doing what needs to happen for that person. And then you're going to adjust what they want and what they need to their schedule. They don't like to get up in the morning at 6 to eat breakfast. I'm not going to get you up at 6 o'clock to eat breakfast. The dining room's going to stay open longer, or we'll fix you a piece of toast, or we'll throw something on the griddle for you. But we're going to make life work on your schedule, not on ours.
In the old model, whether it's an institutional approach or, as you called it, a very traditional approach, when it came to staff, we also had this very siloed approach that I do this. I only do these tasks. These are the only things that I do. And if you're going to have to get somebody else to do that, because that doesn't fall within my responsibility. So somebody else is going to have to do that.
Absolutely. How do you make that change? Well, one of the ways is a role that we call it a versatile worker. Sometimes you'll hear the term universal worker. And so we're looking at finding the role that caregiver, we also call them care companions, CNA might mm-hmm. be another word that you'll hear. But these caregivers who, quite honestly, have the closest relationship with the resident,
sure.
we're looking to keep them more versatile in what they're able to do, to be part of your recreation and leisure. Mm-hmm. So it's not that traditional that only an activity person can sit down and engage in something that adds to your social well-being. They may also be involved in some of the cooking mm-hmm. that happens so that they can do that short order cooking if needed. Because in our newer communities, in what we call a household model, it is in fact a little house. It may be a 10 or 12 or 14 bedroom home, but it is a home, and you have the kitchen and you have the living spaces, and we really learn to work together as a team. I may help pick up your room for you if that's part of it. Is we have a director of nursing who used to, you know, the first time someone from leadership saw her with a vacuum was kind of like, what is a nurse doing vacuuming? But it's what needed to be done right at mm-hmm. that particular moment. So she rolled up her sleeves and she did it.
And that doesn't mean that her skills as a nurse aren't valued and that she's not utilized, you know, that those skills aren't used appropriately. It's just more, it sounds like more of a team approach to things.
You're absolutely right. We still honor and respect the expertise. And in fact, I truly believe in practicing person-centered care, as clinicians, mm-hmm. we have to be even better. Because we have to be able to be versatile. We have to be able to set priorities. But part of that also comes because we start to learn to look at the resident different. As a nurse, the word patient, we used to call everybody who lived in a nursing home a patient. Mm-hmm. And you think about that language. And as a nurse, when I think of patient, I'm thinking of someone who has things wrong with them,
sure.
things that I need to fix. And that's not how I want to see the people that live with me in our nursing homes. They're not there because they have diabetes or Parkinson's or even Alzheimer's. They're there because of the way those diseases have impacted their lives, impacted the quality of their lives, mm-hmm. their ability to do things for themselves. So I'm there to support that and do everything I can to help them be as independent as they can in physical independence, as mm-hmm. well as independence in decision making and being part of the team. I used a word earlier that I absolutely love. That a physician named Dr. Al Powers, who is very, very involved in person-centered care and in helping us to learn ways to reduce the use of antipsychotic medications with the elderly. And he uses the term, instead of caregiver, he uses the term care partner. And really, that says a lot mm-hmm. to us. We are partners with the people that we serve. We are not the ones that know everything to do. Mm-hmm. They know. They're fully capable of helping us and being part of a decision, even when they can't talk to us. Mm-hmm. They're telling us all the time. We just need to learn to listen. And that's part of this new culture, is really finding better ways
sure.
to learn who the people are that we're working with and find ways to respect and honor that.
And it just seems to me that sounds more like a holistic approach. You were mentioning that if someone has Parkinson's or diabetes or something that affects how they live their daily life, mm-hmm. that affects various things, not just one aspect of their life, but it affects many aspects of life. And so this approach seems to care for the whole person rather than just a medical issue.
Absolutely. One of the ways that you hear this explained a lot of times is in long-term care, we truly have been focused on quality of care. Now, definition of quality of care has changed. Mm-hmm. I've been a nurse for almost 30 years now, and it has changed over those times. We've learned a lot. but that was our focus, was quality mm-hmm. of care. And we worked very hard to make that happen. But what we're saying now is there's more to life than quality of care, and we need to look at quality of life. And I truly believe I can provide exceptional quality of care and you still not have a good quality of life. And the classic example of that is 20 years ago, we used restraints a lot. We didn't have anybody falling. That mm-hmm. was our goal. That was the quality of care issue that we were after. People didn't fall. However, we had a lot of incontinence. We had a lot of skin breakdown. We certainly had a lot of depression. And mm-hmm. I truly believe we broke the spirit of so many people who were with us. Best of intentions. We truly believe we were
sure,
doing the
right
thing.
Sure, you didn't want anybody to get hurt by falling.
Absolutely. Scared us like crazy. The beginning of this movement really came from someone who was the untie the elderly, and we all thought everybody would fall and we'd have terrible outcomes. And it hasn't happened. But what we've learned over the years then is quality of care just isn't enough. So if I set my goal at quality of care, that's fine, and I will get there. But I really need to set my goal at quality of life. Because if I'm truly focused on quality of life, I have to provide good quality of care, mm-hmm. or you won't have a good life. So I've really pulled it all together. It's very consistent with what gerontological nursing has always been about. We just kind of got lost, I think, a little bit, and lost in that medical model.
Well, and it seems to me that quality of care is more standardized, whereas quality of life can be more specific to each individual.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's where it comes back. You come right back around full circle, that person-centered. It all does focus on knowing the resident, the guest or the client, whatever your term is
sure.
That you use. And that, frankly, that should be dictated by the people who you're using the term with.
Right.
It all kind mm-hmm. of intermingles when you look at how this works.
Now, Joan, we know that you serve at Lutheran Senior mm-hmm. Services, LSS Living, here in St. Louis area, but you're involved in this, not just in the St. Louis area. You're kind of all over the state, aren't you?
I am. We have to frame it on a bigger level, there is an organization called the Pioneer Network, and that really was where many of the original pioneers, the founders of this movement back in the early 90s, really started to generate the discussion and the conversation and the challenge. And many people have heard of the Eden Alternative, which is a program that was founded by a gentleman named Dr. Bill Thomas, and it was bringing plants and animals and children into the nursing homes and much more than that, mm-hmm. but in a very simplistic way, that's what it was. And so that movement started and has really evolved. And now as a state in Missouri, we have our own coalition, which is kind of under the umbrella of the Pioneer Network, but we're fairly informal as an organization. And Missouri Coalition Celebrating Care Continuum Change is the name of it. We call ourselves MC5 because nobody can say all those words. and I happen to be the board president right now of that organization. And we have 11 regional groups throughout the state of Missouri, a very, very active group here in the East Region that brings caregivers from all over their regions together to talk about and learn about new approaches for how we can provide better services and improve the quality of life for those that we serve. And it's a lot of fun getting to be a part of that because I see the wonderful things we're doing in my own organization, which makes me incredibly mm-hmm. proud to be part of. It's also wonderful to see things happening throughout the state and knowing that this is bigger than just any one organization. This is something that we are trying to change
sure.
within our society.
Right. It's a culture change.
Absolutely.
Now, here's the tough question. How do you go about making that culture change? Anytime that you try to make a paradigm shift, it obviously takes time. You mentioned that, you know, some of the pioneers that started this, that was in the 90s. And here we are in 2014. So, you know, potentially 20 years later, how do you make this change? How do you go about making this change within an organization such as Lutheran Senior Services? How do you do that?
Well, I'll share a little bit with it. At LSS, Lutheran Senior Services, what we did, we had to start with building the foundation mm-hmm. and getting everybody on the same page and getting everybody excited about it and building that passion, because I truly think a lot of it comes from the passion. However, passion without process doesn't get you every mm-hmm. place you want to go. So there's some fundamental attributes and dynamics of an organization moving into person-centered care. Those include decision-making. You change the way decisions are made. You change who makes decisions. In that traditional organizational chart with all those silos that we saw, the resident or their family were not even a part of it. Mm. And they should always be the key to decision-making. And then another basic premise is that you want decision-making as close to the resident as possible. So that CNA, who for years knew the resident better than anyone, did more, spent more time with them mm-hmm. than anyone, we weren't asking them. And now we're saying, you know what, they need to be part of the care plan. They need to be part of this discussion. And as nurses and as other care providers and as leadership in these communities, we need to listen to mm-hmm. these people more because they got something very valuable to tell us. The staffing is a fundamental component, as we already talked about, making sure that that is dedicated. The physical environment is very important, not necessarily that you can absolutely... I don't want to say do culture change because you don't do culture change. You can absolutely move forward in changing your culture, even in a very traditional building, and I have seen it, mm-hmm. But it helps. It truly does help. If I, you know, in my mind, I have a picture of what home should look like, mm-hmm. and I want the home for those that we serve to look as much like that as it possibly can. And that's what we've moved to. We have in quite a number of our communities at LSS, we have moved to neighborhood and household models where we have taken larger communities in some cases and made them smaller because mm-hmm. your neighborhoods now are 20 or 30 at most residents. We have others that were built in a household model with 12 to 14 people living in this area. That in itself is going to help you. But you still fundamentally need those practices. Your organizational practices need to change. And I think the very hardest thing in this whole journey is the leadership change. Because it, first of all, has to start with an individual. Mm-hmm. I have to get it. It has to become part of my DNA as a leader. But then it changes your style of leadership. Because as a leader, I am now more of a mentor and a coach. I'm not the one calling the shots anymore.
Yeah, you really do have to give up, like you said, those decisions, those choices, a lot of those have to be handed over.
And that's not easy. Mm-hmm. You know, and most of us, we got into leadership positions because, boy, we had some great ideas and mm-hmm. we could make things happen. And now we need to step back a little bit and we need to find ways to help our team discover those answers. And the interesting piece is many times the answers aren't a lot different mm-hmm. than what we might have come up with. It's the process. It's the ownership now that people have in what you're doing because it was there. It's theirs now. It's not something that, you know, I always tell people that, you know, one of the things that you traditionally look for in a person-centered environment is, do people get to get up whenever they want? And I've always said to people, you know, here's the challenge. If as a caregiver, I always got everybody up at 6 a.m. based on a get-up list because that's what my director of nursing told me in the old world. And in the new world, if everyone gets to sleep as late as they want because that's what the director of nursing told me, then I really haven't achieved that culture change. Because I'm still just doing it because somebody else told me to do it. I need to know why I'm doing it. I need to understand. And as that caregiver, I'm the one that needs to be going to the DON saying, Mrs. Jones doesn't like to get up at 6 o'clock. I'm working with her. She's going to sleep at 10. Here's my plan for how to make sure she's okay. Mm-hmm. That's what we're looking for from people in a very simplistic way.
And how do you keep that simple when you've got so many residents and so many different personalities, many different needs? How do you accommodate that without going overboard?
Well, you know, it's really not as hard as it seems. You think on your own family, and, you know, we look at our own families and we have children and they have, you know, some of them sleep late, some of them get up early, some of them are picky eaters, some of them will eat anything for us. But you fall into a routine. You fall into a trend. You get to know people and you know what they want. So you still find, like any, just in life in general, there's still schedules, there's still predictable things that happen. The difference is that schedule or those predictable things that happen within the course of a day came from the residents, not from us. So we adapted to their needs instead of them adapting to our needs.
I guess it comes with building relationships because you were talking about the wake-up times and you know, Mrs. Jones likes to sleep until 10. But what if someone's going through a rough time and they'll just sleep all day if you let them sleep all day?
Now, we
do
still
you
have,
do that?
Well, no. You know, there are limits and we know that. And that is one of the challenges to it is how do you balance that?
Right.
Again, the same things you would have in your own family. So we still have a responsibility for being sure that people are well cared for. Protective oversight is the regulatory language that we have. But we have to balance that. And you know, one of the words that we like to use, we did a lot with language in our organization and look at the old words and the new words. And the old word being no. We used to say no a lot. The new word is yes. But the caveat to that is it's not always just a blanket yes. I can't say yes to everything in life. But find a way to say yes. Find a way to come as close to what it is. Because, you know, we always talk about when residents are with us for a short time and we're trying to personalize their therapy. You know, when do you go to therapy? But they still need to go because they've got goals that need to be met. And certainly Medicare, as their payer, is expecting them to, to do something well. So I can't necessarily say, what time would you like therapy? And any time you pick, we'll make it happen. I need to give you some choices and say, we have the following times available, which one would work best for you, and we'll work with you. So life is not an open book.
Sure.
But there are choices that we all get to make.
And same with, you know, as you said, in our families with children, too. You can do that with children of any age. Would you like to go at this time or this time? Give them two choices.
Right.
It still gives them the freedom and to the opportunity to feel somewhat autonomous.
Yeah. So. I think, you know, years ago, I was at a community someplace else doing an assignment. And it was, again, it was a community of sisters. And beautiful community, just felt lovely when you went in there. It just had a good feel. And the sisters took care of each other, and it was not licensed, so they had a lot of autonomy in terms of what they could do from a regulatory. There was no regulation for them. And one of the beautiful things that order had, that come to find out what made it so special, is on their care plans for each sister that lived in that community, they started out with a personal mission statement. And that personal mission statement might have been something for someone who was very independent, like taking care of the guest rooms or putting out vestments for Father before Mass. Or for those who could do nothing more, their personal mission statement was to pray for the other sisters. And, you know, that just brought to light that we all need a purpose, no matter where we are in life, no matter what our abilities or disabilities are. We need to be needed. And do we find a way for those living in our long-term care communities to continue to feel needed? And that's one of the things that we have to do for them.
Yeah, all part of that holistic approach to caring for the person.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, our conversation, our time is up, and I've enjoyed the conversation. I know our time has just gone by so quickly. I've learned a lot, and I certainly appreciate your time. Joan Devine, she is the Director of Performance Improvement for Lutheran Senior Services, LSSLiving.org, here in the St. Louis area. Joan, thanks so much for taking time to talk with us here at Worldwide KFUO on Faith and Family today.
Thank you very much for having me.
And blessings to you and all the workers that are serving there at LSS Living. Coming up in just a little bit, we're going to talk with our friends from both of the seminaries, Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne and Concordia Seminary in St. Louis, about youth programs available for youth this summer to learn about vocations and church work. Stick around for more Faith and Family right after this break.
Concordia University, Mequon, Wisconsin, overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of inspiration in action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit cuw.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Abortion has cheapened the value of human life. After it was legalized, we said infanticide, killing a newborn, would follow abortion as surely as night follows day. We were mocked, but have been proven right. Anna Mora placed her newborn baby boy in a plastic bag and left him to die on the street. A construction worker found him, but it was too late. The baby had suffocated. Anna killed her baby because he looked like her former boyfriend, and she feared it would be off-putting to the new boyfriend. Nadine used a knife on the throat of her newborn baby boy, then went to a club dancing. She killed her son because she's afraid he'd interfere with her sex life. Abortion has cheapened life to appalling lows. We must end it and pray for those involved.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.
Listening to Worldwide KFUO on the go with your smartphone doesn't mean you have to walk around with earbuds all day. You can Bluetooth across the room to a speaker system in your home or listen on radios that have built-in smartphone cradles. There are many easy ways to listen to WorldwideKFUO.org on the air, online, and on demand. We proclaim the clear gospel message of Christ crucified for our sins. The messenger of good news, Worldwide KFUO.
On Memorial Day, Long Gospel will be a repeat broadcast. Therefore, the next live program will be a Ruminations Tuesday with our co-host, the Reverend Mark Smith, as we analyze the hymn selected for the Sunday of Pentecost entitled, Come, Holy Ghost, God and Lord.
Weekday mornings beginning at 9:30 on KFUO.
Retirement? A college education, buying a home, the big decisions in life require a great deal of thought and discussion. That's why nearly 2.5 million members turn to Thrivent Financial for Lutherans for financial advice. We'll develop a financial strategy to help you reach your goals, and we'll provide advice to keep your financial program on track with your dreams. To find a Thrivent Financial representative, call 314-783-4200.
Registered representatives for securities offered through Thrivent Investment Management Incorporated, member FINRA and SIPC.
Israelis and Palestinians are preparing for Pope Francis's arrival in the Holy Land Saturday for a three-day visit. Ultra-Orthodox Jews like Rabbi Isaac Goldstein are protesting plans for Francis to say Mass in the upper room where Jesus is believed to have gathered his apostles for the Last Supper before his crucifixion, because it's believed to be over King David's tomb.
Religion should come together. That's a great thing. But you cannot make a grab. You cannot put yourself superior above other religions.
Francis also will visit Bethlehem, much of which is surrounded by an Israeli security barrier. John Hanna of the Holy Land Christian Ecumenical Foundation says,
we've taken the pieces of this wall and we're going to put them in a cross.
To give the Pope,
symbolic of the Christian presence that's been here for 2,000 years since the beginning, but also on behalf of the Muslim people, because together this is the cross that we bear as Palestinians.
Francis also plans to visit a Palestinian refugee camp. I'm Steve Coleman.
Welcome back to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. Great conversation ahead. Good conversation about culture change there in the first half. And now opportunities for our young people at our seminaries during the summer. So we've got a lineup of guests from around the country, from our seminaries. Joining us by phone today, the Reverend William Reedy from Admissions and also involved with Vocatio at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. Good morning, Pastor Reedy. How are you?
Doing well. How are you today?
Good, good, good. I'm excited about talking about Vocatio. I know there are lots of busy things going on at the seminaries on both campuses today, and so I'm excited to talk about Vocatio here in a little bit.
Great.
Also joining us by phone today, Deaconess Kristen Hodge, coordinator or director of the Phoebe Academy at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne. Good morning, Deaconess Hodge. How are you?
I am doing well. How are you today?
Good, good. Thanks so much for being our guest today on Faith and Family.
Thank you.
Also joining us by phone today, we have seminarian Eamon Ferguson. Good morning, seminarian Eamon Ferguson. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good, good. Thanks so much for taking time to be our guest today and talk about Christ Academy at Concordia Theological Seminary.
Oh, thank you. It's my pleasure.
So we have a variety of programs. These programs, Vocatio at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis and Christ Academy High School at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne and Phoebe Academy at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, all to talk about today in the next 20, 25 minutes, if we can pack it all in. So let's start with Vocatio. Reverend Reedy, tell us, what is Vocatio?
Vocatio is designed to help high school students, both young men and young women, to consider their vocations as Christians. Through baptism, when we're called into faith with Christ, we spend the rest of our lives considering how we as Christians can serve Him and share that good news. Vocatio is designed not only for specifically helping young men and women interested in a full-time church vocation, but also to seriously explore how to be in vocation both as a wife or a husband, a mother, father, and in all the other ways that we are connected to one another. The goal is that we can help young people find what are their gifts, and to help them explore ways that they can use those gifts both, again, in full-time church work as well as in vocations that they're called to already as a student, as a son or a daughter. And we spend a week together doing that.
Very good, very good. And that is coming up in June, is that correct?
Correct. It starts with on Saturday, June 21st, and goes until Thursday, June 26th.
And Vocatio's been going on for quite some time now, I believe, the programs at Concordia Seminary during the summer. What year is this for Vocatio? Do you remember?
Oh, boy, that's a good question because it's actually gone through, it's been morphed a couple of times,
right,
both in meeting the needs of young people, but also in understanding how we can better help them explore. So it's had a couple of different names. I've been connected with it for 3 years, and I believe we're around 10 or 11 years.
Very good. Very good. Well, let's go to seminarian Eamon Ferguson. Good morning, Eamon. Can you tell us, what is Christ Academy?
Sure. Christ Academy is a two-week retreat here at the seminary in Fort Wayne. It's directed towards high school men, and specifically those who are considering entering the office of the holy ministry. And what it provides is an opportunity for these high schoolers to explore and grow in their Lutheran faith. They are immersed in seminary life. They get to take classes from seminary professors, and they spend their days in the classroom learning just like a seminarian would, so they get a good introduction of what preparation for the holy ministry will be like, and then they get free time in the evenings and lots of fun activities so that they grow together with their peers as well.
Very good, very good. And Deacon Asaj, can you tell us about Phoebe Academy?
Yes, Phoebe Academy is for young women that are going into ninth grade up until they're going into college, and it gives them a chance to come on campus. They can bring their parent with them, their mother if they would like, and it's just a weekend event to hang out on campus, learn some theology, do a servant event, find out what ladies do in the church, actually. And if deaconess comes up for them, they'll at least understand what it is. if that is what God's calling them to, they'll know where they can study. Otherwise, they can just know what a deaconess does in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod.
Well, what I'm hearing is it sounds like each one of these programs give our students, our high school age students, an opportunity to experience seminary life, to be a part of seminary classes and learn from seminary faculty, and also have some opportunity for fellowship with one another, to explore a bit about these various vocations, and also some service opportunities. Is that what Vocatio includes?
Yes, it is. We actually have, in the 6 days that we're together, we have several sections that are specifically instructional, where faculty from various departments will spend an hour or so with the students, both in presenting information to them as well as in discussion. But then we go down to Perry County, Missouri, to the Saxon Memorial, and we learn both about the history of the LCMS as it came to the United States, but also we do a service project at the Saxon Memorial, helping get them ready for their season. So we help with getting the cabins ready. We help with doing some repairs and painting and cleaning so that they can continue to be more or less the outdoor Saxon Memorial Museum that they have been. And that's our servant event. And we also go to, in St. Louis, we have, when I try to describe it to someone else as far as a fun place to go in St. Louis, they generally think of the Arch or the Zoo. But we have the City Museum, which when the kids ask about it or if parents ask what type of an event this is, I said,
it's
well,
indescribable.
Well, I tell them, I said, remember how much fun you had going to McDonald's and going to the Playland and going through the bubbles or the ball pool and all that kind of stuff. This is a wonderful age appropriate for high school and older, a place where you can still play and still be a child and still explore and have a great time. And some, I'm not very good with heights, so I let the students enjoy some of the higher things, but it's definitely a great time to do that as well.
Where else can you go ride a Ferris wheel on top of a city building?
Right.
it's kind of it's a neat experience. Yeah. It's kind of a one-of-a-kind sort of thing and neat. Well, that sounds like a fun opportunity for fellowship as well, to get out and do some fun stuff. Eamon, does Christ Academy have some fun and fellowship activities?
Oh, yes, we certainly do. Every year, I think one of the favorite activities is that we usually take a trip out to an amusement park. So often in the past, it's been a trip out to Cedar Point, and they spend the day out there riding the roller coasters and just having a fun time with each other. This year we're going to a water park, so we'll spend, it's a Saturday usually, we'll spend a Saturday out there. And we also have some, you know, smaller activities during the week. We go to a baseball game, the local team here in Fort Wayne, and we have intramural sports tournaments that go on throughout the week over campus. We also go out and sing. The young men here have a choir, and they go out and sing at various churches throughout the Fort Wayne area as well.
Wow. So you've got a tight schedule with all those fun things and all the learning during the day. Do they sleep at all?
Probably not as much as they would like or as much as the proctors would like, but we try and make it as full but as relaxed as possible.
Deaconess Hodge, what types of activities for fellowship and that the like for our Phoebe Academy students?
Well, first of all, we are going to go do our servant event together, and it's going to be at Lutheran Life Villages, so that in itself is going to be fun. And then we will also be going and doing an event. Last year we went bowling. I'm not sure if we'll go bowling this year or not, but had a blast just getting to know each other.
Well, that sounds like fun too. You know, maybe we just need to go to all of these at the same time, right? All summer long.
I was thinking that with the Ferris wheel, yes.
Really, the City Museum is a place to check out. Now, Is there still time to sign up for these? Is there for Vocatio? Is there still time to sign up for this, Reverend Reedy?
Sure, we still have openings, and as much as we hope that people will have a little more than the 3 weeks left to plan, we're more than happy to have more. We have plenty of space in the dorms yet, and the sooner the better that we hear, the more we can make sure that we have all the ins and outs taken care of, including making sure everybody has a T-shirt and all that sort of thing.
There's one other aspect to Vocatio that I don't think we've gotten to yet, and that is the college fair.
Correct. They arrive on Saturday, and we have as many as possible. The admissions counselors from the Concordia system who come, as well as from Valparaiso University. And so they have a chance on Saturday, as they're getting to know one another, they also have a chance to get to know some of the recruiters and other reps from the Concordia system in Valpo. Then on Sunday, we worship together and have a day where we spend more of a Sabbath having some time at the St. Louis Zoo. And then we have lunch together, and then we come back to campus in the evening, and we have a college fair that runs for several hours. First, each of the institutions presents their usual presentation of what their strengths are and why they would like to have students choose them. And then the students can go from table to table and ask specific questions, ask about majors and programs, and have a chance to interact with them some more. The counselors then stay around for a couple additional days so that they can continue to, as questions come up, answer them. It's the most economical way we've found for people to explore each of the Concordias without having to drive all the way from Bronxville, New York, to Portland, to Irvine, California. And that allows each of the people to from the Concordias and from Valpo to share their information without making as many trips as well. So it's kind of fun, too, because there's a lot of friendly banter back and forth between who has the better football team or who offers the best Greek classes or so on and so forth. And many students who also find that they're not going to go into full-time church work have not necessarily thought about going to one of our universities. Mm-hmm. And so this gives them a chance to realize that you can go to a certain school and be an engineer, or you can go to become a teacher or something else. And that's something that they didn't always know about, because if your parents didn't go to a Concordia, or you don't know anyone in your congregation that did, sometimes that's not a common conversation.
Sure, sure. I was the first generation in my family to go to a Concordia University. And I think this is probably what really highlights what brings out the name of the program, Vocatio. Mm-hmm. As you were talking about God's calling, it might be to a church work vocation, but it might be to, as you said, maybe an engineer or anything else. It could be to any vocation, but understanding an opportunity to learn about how God uses you in the vocations that you're given.
Exactly.
Very good. Anything else about Vocatio in terms of the schedule that you'd like to share?
Well, probably not so much the schedule, but we are very intentional in having our counselors, the adults that are involved with being in the dorms and also teaching and such along the way as well. We have a combination of students who have come from the Concordias, so we have somebody who's, some of them have already gone through Vocatio, now they're at a Concordia. We have one who will be from Concordia, and then we'll also have another one that's a current student here at the seminary. So as often as possible, we've been able to do that by having a deaconess student and also a seminary MDiv student who are involved every single step of the way. And that helps them to see both the next step, the people that are at the college level, mm-hmm. as well as the step following that when they're actually here at the seminary. And that's a dynamic that has fostered many great friendships and Facebook friends and so on, that they have someone other than an admissions counselor, someone mm-hmm. other than their pastor, that they can ask those questions. What is it like when you come from a public school and you're going to a Concordia? What is it like then when you go from a Concordia to the seminary? And that's a dynamic that we find to be so rewarding to just watch it happen. You can't program it as much as just get out of the way and let those bonds form. The other part that I think is a dynamic that is enjoyable is just the time where we have directed discussions where after the day we have a time to debrief. And
we do it almost in a dual role, one with being an evaluation of what was going on that day. And we use a somewhat common way of calling thorns and roses. What were the points of the day that were a little bit more difficult or a challenge or maybe just plain not that enjoyable? And what were the roses? What were the parts that were most enjoyable or you got the most out of it? And that seems to be an amazing springboard into unpacking a lot of what happened during the day that they heard from a professor or they heard in another discussion, to take it and make it much more applicable to where they are. It's also when some of the Shire students have an opportunity to be engaged because they don't feel comfortable talking to a college professor or a seminary professor. And those the dynamics of having a group at night under a different sort of environment makes it an incredible educational opportunity.
Sure, sure. Deaconess Hodge at Phoebe Academy, what does a typical day look like? Who will the students encounter throughout the day?
Well, they're going to be talking to the director of the Deaconess Program, Dr. Busher, and also the associate director, Amy Rast, as well as some deaconesses that I am having come talk to them about what it's like to go to college and what to remember when you're picking out a college. And some of the college students in the area are going to come in and speak about what's been most important in their life with their Lord while they're going to college.
Very good. And Eamon, what about for the Christ Academy students? What would a typical day look like, and who would they encounter throughout the day?
Well, a typical day usually begins 7 a.m. with matins and breakfast, and then the rest of the morning is full of classes. So in the classes, they'll get to meet our seminary professors, and then often there are pastors from around the area who will also come and teach guest lectures. So they'll do that for most of the morning and the early afternoon, and then in the evening, we all meet together as a group. We call it All Academy, and we talk about the day, we talk about upcoming events for the next day, and we answer any questions the students have. We usually produce every day a newsletter, which we go through. It usually has quite a few jokes concerning events that happen throughout the course of the day. And then the evening after that, we have usually outdoor activities, capture the flag, football, soccer, stuff like that. And we end every day with dorm groups. The dorms are all split up into small groups, and they meet with proctors and talk more about the day, go through what they learned in their classes. The proctors will attempt to answer any of the questions that classes may have inspired in these students. And then we have a comp line service, and then it's bedtime. So it's a very full day. Students throughout the course of these 2 weeks will also get the opportunity to meet with various deans of the seminary, the academic dean, and so forth. And also, we will get an opportunity to meet with the seminary president. We'll meet with him, take some pictures. That's always a noteworthy event here at the seminary.
Very good. Well, let's talk about the timing of the event and registration. Can students still apply for Christ Academy?
They certainly can. Again, I would say that earlier is better than later, but there's certainly still room for them to apply. And we actually have an online application that really streamlines this process. And that's available right off of the seminary website, ctsfw.edu. And there's plenty of room if students are still interested. We never turn down applicants. We're always happy to take as many people as we can. It's a wonderful experience.
Very good. And the dates for Christ Academy High School this summer?
These will be June 15th through the 28th.
And so they would be living on campus at Concordia Theological Seminary for 2 weeks. Is that right?
Yep. They live in the dorms. They eat in the cafeteria. And it all happens while there are still students here taking their summer Greek courses and all of that wonderful stuff. So they get to interact with current seminarians, too, which is a big plus.
Wonderful and summer Greek. I've never heard those words in the same sentence.
Well, I didn't have to take it, so I can...
Deaconess Hodge, in terms of getting signed up for Phoebe Academy this summer, still opportunities?
Very, very much. Still opportunities. The deadline isn't until July 18th. And there is an application online at ctsfw.edu under the admission page. And I also have them here in the office and don't mind dropping them in the mail at all. And that you can reach me by calling 260-452-2155.
260-452-2155. And we'll also provide links to all the program information today, to all these programs, with the archive of the program. Vocatio. I'm sorry. We didn't mention the dates, did we, for Phoebe Academy? What are the dates?
It is August 1st through the 3rd this year. We hope to lengthen it next year. This is our second year this year,
mm-hmm.
and we've been asked to lengthen it. The girls absolutely loved it, so I'm looking at lengthening it for next year.
Very good. So the beginning of August, the 1st through the 3rd, right. Is that right?
Yes.
Very good.
Come get some theology before you go back to school.
Very good. Vocatio, the dates are in June 21st through the 26th. Reverend Reedy, how can they go about registration for that?
They can also go to our website, CSL, Concordia St. Louis, csl.edu. And on the right hand, you will see Becoming a Student and the tab for Visit Us. And it's all right under there. So they can... send it to us electronically, or we're more than happy to even take it over the phone. The direct number is 314-505-7200.
Very good. 314-505-7200 to find out more about registration for Vocatio coming up June 21st through the 26th at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. Well, all of them sound like just out. Really great events to learn about vocation, whether it be church vocation or, even if you go to this and you're thinking beforehand, you're thinking maybe, becoming a pastor or a deaconess or a DCE or a teacher or, a servant in the church in one of those professional church work career routes. But then you go to it and you think, well, maybe not. It still can be a valuable experience because it helps you think through those things, right?
Absolutely.
So spending some time at the seminary campuses during the summer certainly can be a good thing. Well, go check it out. Like I said before, we'll post the links to each of these programs as well with the archive of today's program on kfuo.org. Once we get the recording of today's program posted on there, we'll post the links with all that information as well. Well, I've certainly learned a lot, and I appreciate all of you spending some time with us talking about these programs. So our guest today, we've had Reverend William Reedy from Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. Pastor Reedy, thanks so much for being our guest today on Faith and Family.
Thank you for having me.
Blessings to you and all the folks gathering for graduation. You have commencement this evening, don't you?
7 o'clock, and it is an absolutely beautiful day here in St. Louis. It's not too hot, and it's actually less humid. So this is certainly the day the Lord has made.
Outstanding. Thanks for being our guest today, Pastor Reedy.
Thank you.
And also by phone, our guest has been Deaconess Hodge. Deaconess Hodge, thanks so much for being our guest on Faith and Family today, telling us about Phoebe Academy and for spending some time with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's been a joy. And also a seminarian, Eamon Ferguson. Eamon, thanks so much for taking some time to be our guest on Faith and Family today.
Thank you. It's my pleasure. I'm happy to spread the word about Christ Academy.
And you all have graduation going on, commencement going on. Is it today or tomorrow?
It's tonight.
It's today.
Tonight. All right.
And it is beautiful here in Fort Wayne as well.
So both campuses are going to be packed this evening. Well, blessings to you all. Thanks so much for being guests on Faith and Family. Coming up in just a little bit, we've got Moments of Assurance with Reverend Mark Hawkinson. Great music, inspiration, and conversation. Stick around for that right here on listener-supported worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at KFUO.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.